for the day by 19 points from yesterday's close. I'm Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and on the program today, we're going to be talking about worldview-related issues. This is what we do on Wednesdays, especially because Wednesdays are sponsored by World Magazine. By the way, you can still take advantage of the discount that we offer for World Magazine if you go out to my website at www.knowingthetruth.org. There is a link there in the right-hand column. Click on that, and you get 74% off the cover price of World Magazine. These guys have only taken the magazine and made it better in 2011. They've done an excellent job. A lot of great reporting that's taking place in that magazine, great stories that they're covering. You don't want to miss out on these things. It will really help you to stay up to speed on what's taking place in the world, and hence the title of it, World Magazine. But you'll be able to do so from a Christian worldview, which, of course, is extremely important for the folks in our listening audience, which tend to be evangelicals, not only here in the upstate of South Carolina, but across the country. With that, let me tell you where we're going in our radio program today. Up first is going to be Jamie Dean from World Magazine. She's just returned from Haiti, and want to have a conversation with her about a couple of the things that are taking place. Some of her most recent articles, even more specifically, I want to ask her about. This isn't really related specifically to Haiti, but I did want to ask her about her article that she wrote called "Tis the Season." In that article, she talked about the fact that this past holiday season that we just came off of, Christmas time, that it was marked by a number of new kinds of attacks against believers in North Africa and in the Middle East. And then after getting a little bit of a summary of what she wrote there, I want to talk to her about Haiti and what is taking place there in Haiti. Just had some news items that came up the last few days about the former dictator who has showed up there again, the exiled dictator, Baby Doc Duvalier, I think is how you say his last name. Well, he was showed up there again. People aren't quite sure why, what are you doing here, this type of thing. And so we want to hear from Jamie about what's taking place there as well. There's also, she wrote an article called Haiti's Other Crisis. And it starts off talking about that in the shadow of high-profile political circus that is taking place in Haiti, that the Haitians themselves continue to languish in this extreme poverty and the conditions that are there in Haiti. So that's what we're going to talk about during the first half an hour. The second half an hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Peter Jones, and we're going to be talking about something called One-ism. We're going to be talking about the UN's Earth Charter. These are all things related to radical environmentalism. And we've been talking about this for the last couple weeks on the program periodically. And then I also mentioned that we're showing a 12-week DVD series at our church every Wednesday night for the next 11 weeks now, 12 weeks in total, called Resisting the Green Dragon. And tonight we'll actually be watching the segment of that DVD that has Dr. Peter Jones on it. He'll be talking about rescuing people from the cult of the Green Dragon. So we'll talk with him more about this type of worship, creation worship, and this ecology gone mad, if you will. We'll talk with him about that in just at the bottom half of the hour. With that, let me go ahead and welcome Jamie Dean back to the radio program today. Jamie, it's a pleasure to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me.
I understand, Jamie, you returned recently from Haiti. Is that correct?
I did. I returned this past Friday from Haiti.
I think you could hear in my introduction that before we get to Haiti specifically, I just really found your article, "Tis the Season," in the most recent issue of World Magazine. I wish I could say I found it enjoyable, but that's the wrong word. I found it disturbing from the aspect of the heightened attacks that are taking place upon Christians throughout North America, I'm sorry, North Africa and the Middle East. Tell our listening audience a little bit about what you wrote in that article before we change gears and look at Haiti.
Well, it really was a disturbing season. Between Christmas Eve and New Year's Day, there were quite a few attacks, as you mentioned, in Africa and in the Middle East. And the most dramatic was in Egypt, where Christians, you know, have suffered persecution there for many years and pretty serious persecution. Most of it hasn't been terribly violent, but on New Year's Eve, it turned very, very violent. A bomb ripped through a Coptic Christian church in the late hours of a New Year's Eve service, and it killed at least 23 people out of about 1,000 attending. And so that was really shocking for Christians in Egypt. In the article, I say it was really an introduction to them to full-blown terrorism. It's really a dreadful step that they've taken. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the authorities kind of shifted blame here and there. Ultimately, it looks like perhaps Al-Qaeda might have been involved. They were certainly posting videos in the lead up to the Christmas season encouraging people to bomb churches, encouraging extremists to bomb churches. They even had videos of how to build a bomb. They had addresses listed of Coptic Christian churches in Egypt, including this church that was bombed. So, you know, it was kind of a chilling thing to see how in a place that has escaped violence that is beginning to creep in there as well. But Egypt wasn't alone, unfortunately. In Nigeria, where violence has definitely marked the communities between Muslims and Christians, there was more violence there on Christmas Eve, 32 killed and about 100 wounded as bombs ripped through shops where people were doing kind of last-minute Christmas shopping. And then on the same night, 6 church workers killed in very direct attacks. In fact, 2 of the men were practicing for a late-night carol service and just slaughtered by extremists who were passing by. So those were just a couple of the places, really. There were more where Christians were just under attack.
You list in the article a holiday death toll. December 24th, Nigeria, 6 workers killed in attacks. December 24th, different area of Nigeria, 32 killed, 80 to 100 wounded when 3 bombs exploded among Christmas shoppers. December 26th, in Tehran, Iran, 25 Christians arrested by the government special security officers. December 30th, in Baghdad, Iraq, 2 killed, 20 wounded in bombings at 10 Christian homes. December 31st in Alexandria, Egypt, 23 killed in bomb blasts at Saints Church. Wow, this is widespread. Any idea why this sudden uptick in such dramatic persecution against Christians in these region in these regions?
You know, one of the people I talked to was Nina Shea, who is a commissioner with the Religious Freedom Group in Washington, and she's also a Hudson Institute fellow who really follows religious liberty issues really closely. And I asked her that question. I said, is this just kind of a coincidence? Was this just a bad patch for Christians in the Middle East? And she seemed to think no. I mean, she said definitely these different groups have at least some ties to al-Qaeda. That's kind of the common thread that's running through a lot of these terrorist attacks in this short period of time. Some attacks al-Qaeda, and she said, you know, it's showing a strengthening of that network. That's a difficult network to pin down. You know, there's no al-Qaeda headquarters that we can go and visit, but,
yeah.
But they're really spreading out, and she's saying, you know, it's really a disturbing trend to see that network strengthening and accomplishing, unfortunately, more and more.
Has this resulted, then, in a mass exodus of Christians from these regions?
Well, of course, in Iraq, we've seen a huge exodus of Christians from that country. Really, some people think the Christian community could eventually disappear from Iraq if persecution there continues. In Egypt, not as much, you know, because as I said before, the violence hasn't ratcheted up this bad in a long time. So, and there's a huge Christian community in Egypt. Well, relatively big, I should say, for the Middle East. The largest community of Christians in the Middle East is in Egypt. We're not seeing Christians necessarily flee en masse in Egypt, but we need to watch what happens. You know, we need to see what the Egyptian government will do, if they will protect Christians. So far, they're not really doing that. Not much happens when Christians are persecuted in Egypt. And, you know, a lot of people say that it creates this climate of impunity where people just continue to do these things, and you create worse and worse scenarios. So it remains to be seen, and it's an area of the world that we really need to be watching.
Is there any idea what the destination of the Christians that were fleeing from Iraq and if they are fleeing from some of these other areas as well, where are they fleeing to? Would the ones leaving Iraq be fleeing to places like Egypt?
Well, you know, a lot of them are fleeing to Syria. That's a pretty common place for Iraqi Christians to end up. It's not the greatest place to end up, however. I mean, it's a relatively easy place to get to, but, you know, religious liberty experts are saying, you know, that they're facing difficult conditions there, not necessarily welcomed by Syria. It's difficult for them to get jobs. It's difficult for them to get housing. And so sometimes they go from one difficult situation to another. You know, of course, some try to come to the United States. There are a limited amount of visas available for people who are fleeing for that case. And some people say there should be more. They say, if we're in Iraq and if we have a war there, that we should open our doors to some of these folks. So you may be hearing more in the coming days of pressure to welcome in some of these people who are, you know, fleeing this kind of persecution.
I was going to ask you about a portion of that. Iraq, since we spent so much treasure and blood there in liberating Iraq, obviously we expect the leaders there to do something to stop this type of bloodshed. Because of our investment there that we've made, a tremendous investment, we assume that we will have some sort of influence over the leadership to get them to protect people of different faiths, much like we do here in this country. Is any of that being talked about, or do you see any pressure being put upon those leaders to do that?
Well, you know, there was talk recently that General Petraeus was going to bring up some of these very issues with some of the top leaders in Iraq, particularly after a letter leaked out from an Iraqi Christian who was in prison under just terrible circumstances and worried for his life. And that kind of created a high-profile moment where maybe some talks went forward. You know, we're not seeing much in the way of real exerted, extended pressure on the Iraqi government to protect these groups. And quite frankly, it's unclear what that would accomplish. You know, as that, even that country becomes more radicalized to some degree, we may just find it to be a more and more difficult place for Christians to remain.
Well, a great article just exposing what is taking place in both North Africa and the Middle East, and I just recommend that to people. They can read it either in the print form if they go out to my website at www.knowingthetruth.org. They can get 74% off the cover price, and they can read articles like that, or they can go out to www.worldmag.com and read some of the articles out there as well. Jamie Dean did did an excellent job on that particular story. But, Jamie, I want to switch gears just a little bit. Because of just coming back from Africa, from Haiti, I want to just get your sense of what is taking place. Now, you've written a couple of articles, and maybe we can combine these two thoughts together, the idea of the political circus that's taking place there, but that the people are still languishing. I think that's the story of what's going on. Would you address that a little bit and give us an update on what's taking place?
Yeah, sure. You know, I was in Haiti actually about a week and a half or 2 weeks after the earthquake last year, so I was interested to see what things would look like when I got back just a couple of weeks ago. Mm. And to be quite honest, even though obviously the immediate trauma of last year has passed and it was kind of a relief to see people moving on and not in quite that emergency mode, in another sense, things looked very much the same. I mean, there were parts of Port-au-Prince where I could have taken a picture last week and compared it to a picture last year, and it would have looked exactly the same. Hmm. You know, the presidential palace still cracked, fallen down in the same exact spot as it was last year. The tent city right across the street on what is essentially kind of like a national park, still there. Lots of the streets still clogged with rubble. Most of the rubble in Port-au-Prince still sitting in the same place as it was last year. So to some degree, you do kind of wonder what has been going on for the past year. Not a lot in the way of rubble removal and reconstruction. Now, of course, unfortunately, Haiti was struck with another series of disasters over the last year, none as severe as the earthquake. But, you know, as the summer wore on, there was a tropical storm that hit right at the epicenter of the earthquake, flooded out a good bit of that area, so they coped with that. But the most serious thing was a cholera epidemic that developed late last year. Has probably killed at least 3,500 people. Some people think it's really twice that many just from unreported deaths. Hmm. And so you really essentially ended up having another disaster within a disaster. So NGOs and aid groups were kind of shifting gears all of a sudden. They were all of a sudden becoming cholera experts and opening cholera clinics. So it was just an overwhelming situation for everyone who was there. But I think you're right, you know, there were a lot of really high-profile events that have happened over the last couple of weeks politically, but underneath all that, you still have people coming into cholera clinics, children, babies, mothers who are homeless, who have no access to food, no access to clean drinking water, or very little access to those things, and are just kind of trying to eke it out while the political sphere just kind of goes in circles. It's very frustrating dynamic to watch.
There still doesn't seem to be any sort of governmental infrastructure there, which is concerning on a number of fronts, not only that nothing is getting done, but once again, we see a disaster take place. We see the people of the United States rise up and give tremendous amounts of money. My only question is, where is the money going? If the government is almost non-existent, if the simplest of this part, removing rubble, you know, which basically just involves machinery, you know, being brought in to remove this rubble out of the way to start clearing this up and cleaning it up, seems like one of the simplest aspects of this. There's other bigger political and poverty-related problems that are there. Is the money getting there? Is the money being lost? Is it being the corruption so great that somebody is making off with the money and nothing's really getting done because of that? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, the money is coming in slowly. There's no doubt about that. Even the U.S., you know, pledged some millions of dollars in reconstruction aid. And the first of our reconstruction aid to Haiti, about $120 million, just arrived in November. You know, some of that was tied up in various bills and that sort of thing, and some congressmen wanted to see assurances that this money was going to get into the right hands. Mm-hmm. So definitely some of the money is tied up on the donors' ends, and Haiti is waiting for some of that money to come. Now, other monies have arrived. I mean, there are private foundations who are at work on the ground, and millions of dollars have come in. But what's amazing to me about Haiti is that even though you're right, just this complete lack of infrastructure, no infrastructure at all, you can still have miles and miles of red tape. It's amazing how that works. One part doesn't work, the other part works quite well. And so there's kind of these endless arguments about things like, where are we going to put the rubble? Where are we going to dump the rubble? And so we don't move the rubble because we're not sure where we're going to put it. You know, arguments that seem, you know, really just maddening to, when there's plenty of places to put it. But there are questions about land ownership and whether we can dump here and there. So just that's one example of how things can just get really mired. Other questions like, who gets the contracts? Are Haitians getting enough of these contracts to do this work? Are too many of them going to foreigners? You know, all of these things sort of mire the process and keep things from getting done. So what you end up seeing in Haiti so far, you know, just from what I saw, was that a lot of the NGOs are just getting a lot more work done. I mean, they'll go straight to a local mayor and say, you know, can we come in here and do this for you? And the mayor will typically say yes. You know, for instance, Samaritan's Purse, I did a good bit of traveling with them. And we went over to Laogon, where the epicenter of the earthquake happened, and a lot of rubble was removed. And essentially Samaritan's Purse and maybe one other organization did a lot of that rubble removal. They went directly to local officials and said, we want to help you get this out. And they said, okay. So sometimes these non-governmental organizations, especially the ones that do a really good job, are able to cut through a lot of that and just kind of get things done. And so the most work, I would say, that's being done now is being done by some of those groups.
That is very interesting, because they don't have all that red tape to deal with. I just find that very interesting that that's where the majority of the actual work gets done. Jamie, any other aspect of what you saw there in Haiti? I just noted that when you were mentioning that the money has started to come, all of a sudden Baby Doc shows up here again. Their politics is just in a mess, huh?
It's bizarre. Yeah, I mean, everyone was stunned last Sunday night when the news came out that Baby Doc Duvier is at the airport. You know, there's just kind of this what is he doing here moment. You know, and a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of theories about why he came back. A lot of them involve money. And he certainly, I mean, I think the thing about Baby Doc Duvier to keep in mind is that he sort of is the crowning example of how foreign aid can go bad. I mean, he is just known for, during his essentially dictatorship from 1971 to 1986, he was just known for taking tons of foreign aid. He kind of laid a guilt complex on the United States and other parts of the world, and then took all this money and just enriched himself. And we played right into that. Thankfully, we've gotten a little bit smarter about that. We have some safeguards in place to not give money so directly to the government. But I think the same principles apply, that there is just such a tremendous opportunity for corruption in Haiti that you have to be really careful about where you're sending money and how it's getting spent. And especially with this issue of no infrastructure, difficulties in making decisions, if you're just pumping money into a system like that, you can't expect a lot of results. So I think that really, you know, donor countries are really going to have to think about, you know, how to get around some of that. Are we hurting more than we're helping? This is the question I think that we should be asking as donor countries and as personal donors. As we're looking at organizations to give to, we should ask that question as well. What have they actually gotten done? Not what are they saying they're going to do or committing to doing, but what have they actually gotten done? And those are the places that you really want to support.
Exactly. Well said, and I'm glad you ended the interview with that, because I think that's very wise, that we need to know what is actually going to be done. A lot of times I think we just give and want to help, but if you end up giving in the wrong way, you can actually hurt the situation, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. Jamie, thank you very much for visiting with us today. We really appreciate your insight and the reporting that you do about these issues. It's really helpful for us to not have to go to Haiti to find this out. We can read read the magazine, read the articles that you write, and then really get a good grasp on what's taking place around the world. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
That was Jamie Dean with World Magazine, and just really appreciate the work that she does. By the way, you can go out and read her article and all the articles that pertain to stories like this out on www.worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. We'll be back in just a second here. We're going to switch gears slightly and speak here in just a minute with Dr. Peter Jones. And we're going to speak with him about his role in what's called the Resisting the Green Dragon 12-part DVD series. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. You won't want to miss that discussion.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
This is Dr. Susan Stegall of Integrative Health Group. Did you know that allopathic medicine does not have a test to detect or measure inflammation? Yet inflammation plays a central role in diseases and hastens aging as well. So controlling inflammation is critical to your health. Whether it is mild or severe, proper nutrients provide safe and effective measures to help lower the flame and allow recovery. To find out more about this and other curable problems, join me each Tuesday at 12:30 for Healthy Alternatives.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Hi, this is R.C. Sproul, and I'm inviting you to join us this spring. We will be having our 24th annual conference in March from the 24th to the 26th here in Orlando, Florida. Over our 40 years of ministry, we've been blessed that God has allowed us to link arms with like-minded teachers and ministries. One of those blessings for me has been the opportunity to work beside John Piper and the people of Desiring God to promote the cause of Christ. And to celebrate each ministry's unique focus, this conference will focus on the theme, Light and Heat, a passion for the holiness of God. So make your plans now to join us for this exciting event scheduled for next spring in Orlando. Register before January 28th to receive the early bird rate. Call 800-435-4343. And once again, we will be meeting at the First Baptist Church in Orlando on John Young Parkway. I hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I've been mentioning over the last couple of weeks that we've been doing a special DVD series, a 12-part DVD series, and with some discussion time afterwards at the church that I pastor out in Traveler's Rest. The name of the 12-part DVD series that we've been discussing is called Resisting the Green Dragon, and it deals with this radical environmentalism versus true biblical stewardship, how we should compare these two things and how we should look at and think about what is taking place in the environmental movement that is growing so big all around us. I've had a couple of guests on the program already related to this. Dr. E. Calvin Beissner was on the program with me. You can go out to our website out on sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth, and you can look up that interview. It will be right there on the homepage of that as well. Also, Dr. James Wanless was with me on the program the other day. He wrote a book that is has the same title, Resisting the Green Dragon. That book has just been released, and so that's certainly another resource you should take advantage of. And you can hear my interview with Dr. Wanless as well last week out on that same website. And now on the program, I wanted to interview another participant in this 12-part DVD series. In fact, this is the speaker that will be speaking tonight in the second installment of our 12-week or 12-part DVD series. And I'm speaking about Dr. Peter Jones. And Dr. Jones, he holds an MDiv from Conwell, Theological Seminary. He also is the director of what's called Truth Exchange. You can go out to their website. I'll give you that before the program goes out. You can go out to their website to find out more. He's an adjunct professor of New Testament as well as a scholar scholar in residence for Westminster Seminary in California. And tonight, during the portion that we're going to watch, is called the segment is called Rescuing People from the Cult of the Green Dragon. And part of that discussion that he goes through in the 30-minute segment of the DVD deals with something that he refers to as one-ism. And that's what I wanted to speak with him about on the program today. What is this one-ism that he speaks about in the DVD and writes about in his most recent book titled One and Two, I think it is. We'll get him to give us that here in just a second. I'm looking it up again. I'll get him to give it to us here in just a minute. The book is One or Two by Peter Jones. There it is, out on Reformation Theology. So with that, Dr. Jones, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program. It's such a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much, Kevin. The two fellows you mentioned, we can become good friends of mine. I had James Wanless speaking at a conference I organized out here in California a couple of weeks ago, and Cal Dyson has been a longtime friend, so I was so happy to be associated with those wonderful brothers.
Excellent. And I want to make sure, before we end the program today, I want to make sure that the listeners know that you're going to be right here in our area, the area I'm broadcasting right now live from Greenville, South Carolina. You're going to be in Columbia, South Carolina here shortly.
Yeah.
At Sinclair Ferguson is the pastor there in the church at the
First Presbyterian Church in Columbia.
Correct. Yeah. And I'll give those dates here and give some information about that to make sure people...
How far are you from Columbia?
99 miles.
I see.
Yeah, 100 miles right down, and very easy drive here from door to door. For me, it's 99 miles. But it's, so that's a pleasure to know that you're going to be right there. I'm going to try to attend that myself and make sure that a number of people here in the listening audience know about that. Tell us about, I'm not quite sure where to start with. Obviously, we're doing this DVD, so I want to relate it to that. But the same concept comes up in your book, One or Two. And so if you would speak about, what do you mean by this idea of one-ism that you're writing and speaking about?
Right. You know, if the problem was just located with the environmental movement, I think we'd be able to handle it quite well. But as a matter of fact, what the environmental movement is representing is a whole direction of a development of spirituality that actually infects everything in the West today. I give lectures on what's happened in the West, and one of the things I note is the Easternization of the West. In other words, from the 60s on, the West turned East, and the Eastern gurus and spiritual teachers of Hinduism have come West, and we have become very much a spirituality of basically Hinduism. And of course, that spirituality has as its fundamental definition, and I'd like your listeners to note this carefully, the Hindu notion of, and here's the Sanskrit word, Advaita, A-D-V-A-I-T-A, Advaita. And Advaita means non-dual, non-dual. That is to say, if you want to know about the true nature of the world, there's no such thing as duality. There's no such thing as difference or distinction. Everything is ultimately joined to everything else in a world of, now I get to my term, oneism. Everything is one. And so, you know, people are getting involved in Eastern meditation, doing yoga, and all kinds of altered states of consciousness. The goal is to feel at one with everything. And that's a very definitely Eastern way of doing spirituality. Excuse me. And it's become so popular in the West. I just finished a book that some of your listeners may well have read called Eat, Pray, Love, which was then turned into a movie where Julia Roberts played the lead role. And guess what? Julia Roberts has become a Hindu.
Hmm.
But the author of the book is a Western woman, very articulate, raised in an Episcopal church, who herself, in the book, proclaims the wonders of Hindu spirituality. We are being invaded, Kevin, on all levels by this notion of oneness. Your listeners, doubtless many, went to see the movie Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And you will hear one of my friends, excuse me, I got something in my... one of my friends on the Green Dragon series, Vishal Mangalwadi, who explains the Avatar, which, of course, is a Hindu for incarnation, and we're supposed to become one with these strange beings who are somewhat, well, they're very human, but they seem also animalistic. And so this mythical picture, you see, has seduced the minds of many that the goal is oneness.
Yeah, it seems to be pervading every, you know, as you mentioned in our movies, Disney has been doing this for years.
Yes.
And, in fact, Michael Ferris.
Life is a classic example of that.
Yes.
Lion King, I mean, which has the circle of life, and everything is in that circle.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is, now in Christianity, God is transcendent, meaning that he is above his creation. He's also, we speak about immanence, meaning that he's involved in what is taking place.
That's right.
But he is above it. But in this new spirituality that you talk about, which is separate from secular humanism, humanism is in decline. This new spirituality is the new thing. It's kind of a replacement theology.
Exactly.
But in this, now in their new spirituality, God is the earth, and the earth is God. So they're one with creation. Am I understanding it correctly?
Absolutely. And, you know, the strangest people have adopted that in terms of the... in terms of your environmental movement, Mikhail Gorbachev, you remember his name, he was raised a Marxist atheist materialist. He was the one who declared the end of the Soviet Union and actually had become a theosophist, a follower of the Russian princess Madame Blavatsky. Nobody knows much about this, but he became a spiritualist. And he came over to the States and founded the State of the World Forum, and this is what he says: the cosmos is my God. Nature is my God. Mikhail Gorbachev has been a major player in the environmental movement since that time, and it was he, along with Morris Strong, and I could tell you lots about him, who commandeered, or rather, who called for the writing of the so-called Earth Charter. And the Earth Charter was indeed written by a number of scholars, many of them really oneists. And that Earth Charter will sort of determine the way we live on this Earth in the years to come. It's been finished. It was actually written in the year 2000. And it's awaiting the General Assembly of the United Nations to be adopted as the law of the planet.
I was going to say that. Some people might say, okay, we're talking about this oneness thing. You know, it almost sounds like we're talking about Oprah here with this new spirituality.
Exactly.
But they might say, hey, what's the big deal that they do this? But the big deal is that... Anyway, all of these established roles that we have are being replaced in our society today, that these rational structures that were associated with modernity are now being replaced by this irrationalism of postmodernism, so that everything is going to change.
Here's the whole picture. I think postmodernism analyzed well the situation of modernity as a closed system, right? Basically a oneist system. Modernity said, you know, you folks claim to speak truth, but your only source is yourselves. Well, that's true. Humanity, if it speaks truth on its own, is in its own closed system. So the critique was correct, but of course what it does is deconstruct our world from knowing any truth. And so how do you put the world together again? And this is where spirituality comes in, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
The paganism of this oneist spirituality puts the world back together again by saying that the meaning of existence is found not in our reason, but in our inner selves, in our higher selves,
mm-hmm.
in our spirit. And thus we go back to ancient paganism to reconstruct this so-called future world of wonderful change and newness, but it's actually the old world of paganism.
And one of the things that I find most disturbing is that they tried to then co-opt Christianity into this. I've heard some speak about the words of Christ in John chapter 17, where he says, "I pray that they may all be one." And they look at that one that Christ talks about there, and even some Christians are duped into this, that that we all should be one. You term it as, in fact, this is somebody else's term, but you talk about it in the series, this perennial philosophy, that the fundamental religious idea at the basis of all religions is what ultimately ties us all together. This is where everything going, right?
That's right. Yeah, the perennial philosophy is the classic coded way of talking about the worship of nature as divine. And that does tie all the religions together. They all do that. The only one that doesn't, ultimately, is Christianity,
mm-hmm.
Biblical Christianity. So that's why when I talk about oneism, I also talk about twoism, because twoism affirms that God is not part of us. He's in relationship to us as the creator to creatures, but he does not define his existence as being part of us. The creator is different than what he makes. So the biblical worldview is a twoist worldview of two kinds of existence, God the creator and everything else which is creature.
Hmm.
Now, when we talk about one, you see, we're talking about the reconciliation of two different elements that can be brought together into a harmonious working together as one. But we do not give up our nature as creatures, and God does not give up his nature as creator. Those two distinctions are maintained in a beautiful harmony of reconciliation. So that's what Jesus means in John 17 when he talks about being one. He's not telling the disciples that they will be God. He says he is, by the way, but he doesn't tell them that they will be, but they will be joined together with him in this beautiful harmonious relationship of reconciled creatures to a holy God.
So man becomes divine in this structure.
If
everything is equal, if everything is one, if the definition of being sacred or being holy is that God is wholly other, that he's different than us, and all of a sudden we're saying, no, we are one, we are one, then nothing becomes different, nothing becomes wholly other, and we end up becoming, humanity becomes divinity. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. Well, you see, at that point, nothing is... excuse me, I got
to play a little music here in the background.
Yeah, right. then we lose the very notion of holiness.
Yes.
Which is terrible for our world, really.
Now let's talk about the methodology that they're using. One of the things that they're using in order to bring this about is the idea of crisis. That all of a sudden we seem to have, I just picked up a Charlotte Observer last week. My wife takes the coupons out of it. And so the cover story was, you know, that the landscape at the coast is going to be dramatically altered over the next few years because of global warming, that the water is rising so much that you won't even recognize the North Carolina coastline. constantly talking about crisis and that the world is going away and throwing this guilt upon people you're not driving a Prius or something.
That's right.
It really seems to be a lot
Well, you know, this Maurice Strong, who's been behind the whole ecological movement at the United Nations,
mm-hmm.
he was the one who called for the Earth Summit. And he is a deeply spiritual pagan man who used to be an elder in a Methodist church, but who rejected biblical faith and became one of these oneists. He, first of all, was talking about the crisis of global cooling. And now, of course, we found a better one that seems to work better. It's global warming. And last week I saw this headline that finally they were able to show that the year 2010 was one of the warmest years in record. And I wrote to Cal Bison. I said, Cal, I've been reading that there's been no warming for 15 years. What's all this? And he sent me back an article that basically showed that the warming was 1/200th of a degree. And yet, you see, we have people beating drums trying to produce a crisis. And this has been done in all kinds of ways, so that I've read articles where children can't sleep at night. They're so worried about what we're doing to the world and everything mm-hmm. else. And this catastrophism has been roundly rejected, actually. I read that there were 31,000 scientists who rejected this.
Mm-hmm.
In a poll that was conducted by an official body, some university. So when you see this crisis stuff, you're almost sure to be meeting an ideology behind it that wants to do something with this notion of catastrophe and crisis. And I believe that what we're seeing is the attempt on the part of a lot of these oneist thinkers to gain control of the environment so that they can change the world to fit with their one world, one spiritual world philosophy.
Hmm. We have noticed that that a lot of the folks that buy into this religion, it really is a religion of cosmology, but into this religion, that they do oftentimes end up being violent. We just saw the fellow recently that took hostages there at the Discovery Institute. He didn't feel that they were doing enough. We saw what took place out with, is it ELF, out there in California and out west, where they were burning down houses and destroying earth-moving equipment and these types of things. Because they're trying to protect the environment. You know, there seems to be, I know they like to point to the religious right and say that they're stirring up violence, but the evidence seems to be that people that are buying into this have at the same time a very low view of human life and an exalted view of the earth, and therefore it leads very often to violence. Do you agree?
Well, I agree, and the problem is, you see, everyone wants to solve problems, and we look around, we see the mess we're in, and we talk about we talk about evil, but it's an evil that we can fix. But the real problem is, of course, that the evil is in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I think these spiritualists go wildly wrong, is that they fail to be self-critical. They must surely know the Bible tells us to look within our hearts and see the evil within us. But they fool themselves, you see, and I tell you how they do it. It's this mystical experience. When you follow the directives of the spirituality and get involved in mysticism and you get into altered states of consciousness, all the notions of good and evil sort of disappear,
mm-hmm.
and you are in this mindless state where you stop your mind from thinking and you are experiencing the world as one. And so you fool yourself into thinking that the real world, the world of the higher self or the self, the subconscious self, is the true world where you don't think, where you don't apply distinctions and differences, including the distinction of good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fool yourself into thinking that you, therefore, are not evil, and that your desires, you see, you are able to justify them now by joining the opposites of good and evil, because you have, in this pagan experience, you have to join the opposites. That's a classic term, conjunctio oppositorum, a Latin term that you find in pagan literature throughout the centuries. And so you join the opposites and create this virtual world of oneness. And that's what's happening in sexuality these days as well. We're joining the opposites of male and female.
Yes.
And the president yesterday made the sort of acceptance of homosexuality in the military a point of American patriotism and national unity.
Yeah.
And we're building a world on this false notion of the joining of the opposites of good and evil, of right and wrong, of male and female, and we are creating a virtual world that will implode one day, and that violence will appear.
Mm. Yeah, we saw this graphically depicted to us last night, where the distinctions between Republican and Democrat, people look upon just any distinction there being a bad thing, so we're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya and all sit together at the State of the Union and give this imagery of oneness that is there, that the, you know, distinction is a bad thing. And the point is that distinction is a very good thing, that we should make distinctions.
Right. And that's right.
So we see this on every level in our politics, in our entertainment. And Brad Pitt recently said, I was telling the listening audience a couple weeks ago, and he's a pretty good bellwether for pop culture, but he said that he normally would not think about the or want to impose capital punishment. He says he's against it. And so for cases of first-degree murder and even serial murder, he doesn't want to consider it. But he said he is rethinking that now in the case of the executives for BP oil because of the Gulf disaster. So if you harm the environment, this is the unpardonable sin. You know, if you interfere with the natural order of the processes of the earth or anything like this, this is death deserving. But to kill babies or to harm other human beings, you know, he couldn't consider it for something along that line. This is where we're going,
this
right?
This is my point, you see, that we are getting rid of distinctions in this oneist worldview. And that the truth is actually twoist. And twoism introduces distinctions, introduces the distinction between us and God. And then God creates distinctions. He is the one that puts notions of distinction into the world he made. And so you read in Genesis 1, he separated things out, you know, the dry land from the sea and the light from the darkness and male and female. And so twoism is our only hope of sanity, both to figure out who we are in this world and worship the true God. And, of course, the other position, oneism, which Paul calls the lie in Romans 1:25, will seek to eliminate all the distinctions. And that's why Paul goes from talking about rejecting the Creator and then eliminating the distinctions between human beings and the rest of nature because everyone's worshiping everything else. And then he moves to homosexuality as the third sign of the removal of distinctions. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, exactly. We're seeing that played out right before our very eyes.
And that's what I try to show, by the way, in my book, Rome, 1 or 2, Seeing a World of Difference. It is actually an extended interpretation of Romans 1 for the present time.
Excellent, excellent. I was trying to get my hands on a copy of that and speak to the publisher about it as well. I wasn't able to do it before the broadcast. But let me tell our listening audience, let me give them a couple of websites. First of all, I want to tell them about your website, which is called Truth Exchange, and the X is in between the word truth and exchange. And it's
There's no exchange. It's just an X and then change.
Okay.
Truth X change.
Exactly. Okay. .com. So www.truthx.com. change.com. You can go out there to find more. I mentioned earlier that Dr. Peter Jones is going to be right here in our area. He's going to be in Columbia. That's February 11th and 12th. It's called the Battle for the Soul Spiritual Life Conference, taking place at First Presbyterian Church in Columbia, South Carolina, where Sinclair Ferguson is the senior pastor of that church. And so you can go to their website. It's firstprescolumbia.org, firstprescolumbia.org, and you can find out more about attending that upcoming event there. You don't want to miss it.
I will be lecturing on this very material at further length, obviously, and going into more detail on this subject.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Jones, thank you very much for visiting with us on the Knowing the Truth radio program, and thank you very much for your work and your ministry.
Well, it's lovely to make your acquaintance, and keep holding up the truth.
Amen. Exactly. And I will hopefully, Lord willing, see you there in Columbia.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Dr. Peter Jones, and I was mentioning that tonight we'll be watching a 30-minute segment with Dr. Jones called Rescuing People from the Cult of the Green Dragon. It's the second in the series of the Resisting the Green Dragon 12-part DVD series that we're showing at Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship. Send me an email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org, and I'll send you directions. All are welcome to attend. Let me remind you, as Dr. Jones was just saying, that Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660.
Life-changing teaching and talk. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660.